back to the EDF podcast. I'm your host, Mark, and I have somebody I've been wanting to really talk to, and a funny story, I recently just got turned on to raw honey, which I didn't even know what that was. I ride my bike up and down Campbell Boulevard, and there's a honey stand, which I've been riding by for 3 years and never stopped in there. I stopped in there and picked up some raw honey, which, like I said, I didn't know what it was. Took it home. Oh, God, is that stuff good? So a week later, I get a phone call. Do you want to talk to somebody about honey and bees and things like that for this solar project? And I was like, oh, man, what timing is that? I just experienced raw honey. So we've got Mary Ann. Isn't that funny? I got Mary Ann on the line. Her company is called G's Bees, and she sets up Beehive. Why couldn't I think of that? You set up true beehives underneath solar projects with EDF Renewables.
We do. Yeah, we have. We're located in Canada. Outside of Ottawa, EDF has a very large solar field, and it's beautiful. You know, it's just full of flowers because they don't farm it. It's just solar panels. And so we have, I think about 5 honeybee colonies there, and they visit all the flowers, and it's great.
Now, when you put the beehives under the solar panels, under those solar panels, they essentially, they're grass, right? So do the bees stay like there, or they just go wherever bees go and come back?
Well, so bees, they'll fly up to 5 kilometers around their beehive. They've kind of got that's their maximum range, but they tend to kind of visit closer. They're efficient. So if there's flowers nearer, they will visit those first. And so where they're located, they're kind of not directly underneath the panels, but kind of over to the side, and then they visit all of the flowers that are there. And at that particular site, they also have some sheep that, you know, take care of a lot of their mowing work, and so the sheep are wandering around, and it's just this nice little
beehive. Marianne, yeah. That never even crossed my mind, because we've interviewed a sheep farmer that does the sheep underneath the solar panels, and never once did I think the two would be together. So sometimes you guys, there's a sheep grazing area and a beehive in the same project.
Yep. But funny story. So the first year the second year that we had beehives there, but the first year that the sheep were there, and the sheep, I guess they were itchy and they started to like rub up against the back of one of the beehives, and they knocked it over. So now we have there's like the sheep area and the bee area, and they coexist very nicely.
So you guys, they are kind of separated somehow. And
yeah, just so that they don't accidentally knock the angry bees over.
That makes sense.
Bees don't like that too much.
I would never thought of that. Now, here's a dumb question. I told you I'm a dumb guy, so I ask dumb questions. Do sheep eat honey?
No, just grass, I believe. I don't know much about sheep, but no, they're not interested in the honey itself.
Oh, okay. Well, then it's a safe co-mingle. And what? I mean, it just blows my mind how you guys have thought this all out. I mean, you know, everybody wants to go green, and how much greener could you get when you've got solar panels with sheep and bees underneath them? I mean,
sounds nice, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. I mean, I'm just, the more I learn about, you know, the solar panels and EDF and now you, it just blows me away.
Yeah, they definitely are thinking outside the box in terms of like how to make the most out of that property that they're using. That's for sure.
So I have a jar of your honey right in front of me.
Okay.
From Sunny Honey. A lot of thought went into that name.
for EDF, we do. They have their own custom labels, so there it's very specific. And you'll see the jar; it has kind of like a solar panel design to it, and it's Sunny Honey from their location.
How slick is that? What a brilliant idea! And then, I mean, honey's like a big thing now. You know, people
absolutely.
Nutrition wise. I, you know, of course, I told my little story about my bike ride. So I'm reading, you know, what is raw honey? I didn't know if I could actually eat it out of the jar, because the honey stand I was talking about is kind of on the side of the road, and, you know, there's mm-hmm. no one there. So there's nobody to ask. It's not like a store right. or anything. It's an honor system. You put the money in, you know, which is common in my neighborhood. But, you know, I didn't know anything about raw honey. And I'm sure. reading. Well, so, I'm reading so about
a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell me about it. That's what I want to know.
So most grocery store honey is pasteurized. Now, honey isn't pasteurized for the same reason that milk is pasteurized. It's not done for a bacterial reason. It's done to keep it as a liquid on the shelf. So, you know, a jar of honey might sit in the grocery store in a plastic squeeze bear for, I don't know, maybe a year. And, you know, people don't like to squeeze rock hard honey out of a plastic jar. So to slow down that crystallization process, which is natural in honey, what they do is that it gets heated really, really hot and filtered really fine so that it will just stay as a liquid. Honey straight out of a beehive is perfectly safe. It doesn't need to be pasteurized. It's naturally antibacterial. So that rawness, that's just that it hasn't been heated really hot. So it still has all of its goodness, the enzymes and the pollen and the flavor that honey is supposed to have.
Well, I can vouch for, and now do you sell both pasteurized and raw?
We don't pasteurize any of our honey. No, it's all raw. So it will eventually crystallize. Honey that's gone solid is still perfectly good to eat. You can spread it on toast or stir it into tea. Or if you prefer it as a liquid, you can actually just heat it a little bit. I usually tell people to put the jar of honey in like a pot of hot water and melt it back to a liquid. And then it's just like it was before.
I was, of course, doing a little bit of my own internet research on honey before I met you, or I would just want to talk to you about it. And it's one of the few foods that, according to the internet, and I don't know if it's true, that never spoils.
Never spoils. That's true. Yeah, it has, it's because it has such a low water content, and the natural sugars from the flowers, it has such a high concentration of those that nothing can actually like grow in it. For whatever reason, it produces hydrogen peroxide. So it's got this natural antibacterial quality.
Wow.
So you can use it. Yeah, there's a lot of research too looking at it for, you know, you can use it on bad burns and cuts and those sorts of things, which is pretty amazing.
And on toast. Oh.
And on toast.
Oh.
Better on toast.
Marianne, it's so good. You know, I don't remember. I didn't have the right change. So I ended up with three jars of, like, I guess medium-sized jars, because the combination of the three jars was what I had in my pocket on my bike ride. So, you know, I got it home. I'm reading about it a little bit. And, you know, of course, after I found out that I don't have to do anything to it, I can just eat it. I dipped the spoon in there. Yeah, the jar was gone in one day.
What's amazing about honey is that it tastes like the flowers that the bees visit to make it. So, you know, one batch of honey at the beginning of the season might be quite different than what the honey tastes like at the end of the season, just because the flowers change over the course of the summer. Or honey from your area in upstate New York could be quite different from, well, probably not that different from us in Ottawa, because we've got a similar type of geography, but definitely different than, you know, honey from, let's say, Florida or California or Hawaii or, you know, other places where they have different flowers.
So it when it comes to putting the bees underneath the solar panels, where, you know, I guess they have to be brought in, of course. Where do you go and buy bees to set up a beehive? I mean, that's another thing. Like, where do they come from?
That's a great question. Well, in our case, we have enough honeybee colonies that what we do in the springtime is you can make a split. So you can take your honeybee colony and you can take a few frames of bees and a queen or a queen cell, which is a special cell that a queen is going to hatch out of, or you can even buy a queen from a queen breeder. And you take these few frames of bees from one hive and you put them in a brand new hive and you introduce a queen, and then you have a new beehive. So that's how we do it in the springtime. If you were just starting out in beekeeping, probably what you would do is you'd find a local beekeeper and you'd ask to purchase something called a nuc, which is a nucleus colony, which is four frames of bees and a queen. Or you might purchase a package of bees, which is like a box of about 2 pounds of bees and a queen, and you introduce that into a beehive.
And it's, you know, I don't live totally under a rock. Bees are endangered.
Bees, I don't know that they're technically on the like endangered species list, but they are having a rough time. The wild pollinators, like the bumblebees and some of those species of bees, as well as the honeybees, due to a whole combination of things, pesticide exposure. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of pesticides that are used to grow crops and different things that are hard on bees, as well as, you know, they have their own pests and diseases. You know, sometimes in certain areas where, let's say, it's nothing but corn and soy, there might not be a lot of other types of flowers for the bees to visit. And so what's nice about the EDF project is that, you know, they're not spraying those acres of fields with anything.
Right.
And wildflowers are growing there. You know, they're just, the bees are just living amongst the basically just enjoying the landscape while the solar panels suck up sun, I guess. So it seems to work really well for them.
So, and you manage all these for EDF, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. and do you have to hire local people, I suppose, right, to go out and beekeep, right?
Yep. So we check on the beehives about every 10 days to 2 weeks through the peak part of the season.
You beat me to that question. I was going to ask, you know, when a bee tender, what's that person called? A beekeeper?
Yep.
So that person would need to go visit the hives every what, 7 to 14 days, did you say?
Yeah. I would say in May and June, it's probably about every 10 days. And then it's, you know, every 2 weeks or so through the rest of the summer. And then we harvest the honey around the end of August, beginning of September.
I've always wondered, if there's an abandoned beehive, what happens if no one takes the honey out? Do they stop? They just move on? Do they leave?
Well, what ends up happening is, so for whatever reason, honeybees, they store more honey than they need to eat. So they do end up sort of, if it was a beehive, it has a limited amount of space, right? And so they end up backfilling a lot of their comb, the honeycomb, with honey until they run out of room. What happens is the queen, she runs out of room to lay eggs. There's a section of the honeycomb that is just for her to lay eggs in, and they raise larvae and baby bees. When she runs out of room to lay eggs, the colony gets really crowded, and they kind of sense this. And so what will happen is the bees will start raising a new queen. And the old queen, she'll leave with half the bees. This is called a swarm. So a swarm of bees, they all leave kind of, usually that happens around the end of May.
Like they show up at baseball games.
Yeah.
I've seen that. And that's how that happened, is the bee had, the queen had left. And along the way, some one reason or another, they showed up at the baseball game and freaked everybody out.
It seems like every summer there's a story about a swarm of bees in a baseball game.
Pause
it and there's always a beekeeper in the audience. Yeah. They run out.
Yeah, he happens to have the whole outfit with him at the game, and it's even got the team's logo on it.
Right. This will get us some media.
Yeah. And then he goes and plucks it's like it's nothing. But that's right. How that happened is the new queen left and took a bunch of the bees with her. And for one reason or another, she stopped. Maybe she wanted a hot dog and a beer, you know, catch a couple innings of the baseball game. And that's how that happens. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But you do see it all summer long.
Yeah. And so what will usually happen is the old queen leaves with half the bees. The queen that's left behind takes over the colony. And the bees, they're looking for a new place to live, like something that's hollow, maybe a hollow tree, or I don't know why a baseball diamond, but you know, they're looking for somewhere else to start building honeycomb and storing honey. And that's sort of that's how honeybees reproduce nature. And the other thing is that with a swarm, it is quite like what you said. You can just go and like plop them in a box. They're so gentle in that state. They've eaten a whole bunch of honey before leaving, and they don't have anything to defend. And so they kind of usually land in like a big ball, this big ball of like thousands of bees. And you can kind of, if it's a tree branch, you can just cut the tree branch and, you know, lower it into, like, put it in a beehive, and they'll kind of take over. And it's easier than you would think.
And that guy that happened to be at the baseball game, he's at every game. That's like hitting a lottery for him, because that's right. I mean, you know, I guess, a rogue. Yeah. I was trying to stay away from the bee puns because I was going to buzz you up.
It can't be helped. You can't avoid the bee puns.
You never know if you're going to offend somebody if you start kind of teasing them what they do for a living. So I tried to stay away from them.
My last name is G, and my company is called G's Bees. You don't think I get BG jokes?
Oh, but yeah, but it depends on the personality. Some people don't want to hear it, you know? You know how it is, but you're obviously okay with it. But that's like free bees.
Freebies.
Well, that's fantastic. Oh, I'll be using that one all the time. So when I see it on the news this summer, I was like, hey, guess what he got? He got freebies. Freebies. It's like hitting a lottery for him because, I mean, what's like, I don't know, when you see like a swarm, if you would have to buy that or bring it up on your own, there's got to be some costs involved, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, if you were to start beekeeping and buy a nucleus colony, I'm not quite sure what they cost where you are, but like up here, they're, you know, it's probably about $200 for that starter bee colony. So yeah, it's a nice little find.
The thing
about a swarm too is that they're primed for building honeycomb and building up their colony because that's their natural instinct. So they, you know, a swarm in there's a beekeeper, a little poem about swarms, and it's, a swarm in May is worth a load of hay, and a swarm in June is a silver spoon, but a swarm in July ain't worth a fly. Because by July and August, you're kind of late in the season, and they don't have as much time to do their thing.
Well, and that's what was going to be my next question for you, and being in from the Great White North, and we're pretty close ourselves in Western New York and Central New York, all over New York. Where do they go in the wintertime? What happens?
Well, they stay inside their beehives. So unlike other insects, so, you know, a lot of insects go dormant in the winter, but honeybees, they don't do that. So what they do instead is that they cluster together in the hive in a ball, and they shiver their flight muscles to generate heat, and they kind of stay in this little ball for the winter, and they move around the hive eating honey. And that's kind of what they do. So from where we are, from about, at least probably beginning of November until beginning of April, that's what they're doing. They're just in their hive eating honey. So we have to make sure that they have enough honey for the winter for themselves.
And, you know, here in this part of New York where I am, I mean, we get a lot of hornets, you know, and they are yellow jackets. I don't know, you know, they look like bees, of course, but they're not honeybees, and they're just nasty. And, you know, and I have an exterminator friend, and I've gotten, I guess, a hive or whatever, you know, a hornet's nest late in the season, very late. And, you know, he told me, just let it go because they're going to all die. They're all going to die in another month anyway. So there's no point in paying me to come out and do my thing. And do they actually die or do they go away?
Well, with hornets, I mean, I don't know as much about hornets, but he's right. So honeybees, they actually stay as a colony all together through the winter, and they generate heat and come out the next spring. With hornets and many other species of wasps and bees, what happens is the queen, I think she leaves to hibernate somewhere, and the rest of the colony does die off, and then the queens, they start new colonies the next year.
Oh. Hmm.
So that I think with hornets, like she starts to build the nest by herself and lays a few eggs, and then they hatch and help her build the rest and raise the rest of the colony. But it is different.
But I, you know, honeybees really, I mean, I don't know why I've always been fascinated. They got a lot going on.
They do.
They are an amazing creature because without them, we die as humans.
Yeah. They're a cornerstone species. So, along with, you know, a lot of the other pollinators, they pollinate a third of the food that we eat. Like if you're thinking apples or berries or, you know, fruits and vegetables or seeds, along with not just what humans eat, but, you know, the food system and like with the other animals as well. So they're kind of a cornerstone species. They're at the basis of the food web. And so, yeah, we definitely need them.
We do need them. And you're doing it, and you and EDF are really helping us keep them alive.
Yeah, they're doing a really nice thing. They reached out to us, I guess, in 2016 with an idea that they wanted to build, they wanted to plant pollinator-friendly flowers, and we kind of gave them some advice on what to plant and worked with them on that. And then soon after that, they were like, well, what about some beehives? Can we put those in there too? And we said, absolutely, let's try it. And so it's now been, I guess this will be their fifth summer there.
That's absolutely amazing. I'm just blown away by the whole thing. So your website is G's, and it's spelled G-E-E-S, bees, bees.ca. And that's
that's right.
Canadian website.
Absolutely.
And Marianne, you are the queen bee, right?
I'm the queen bee.
You really are. I looked at some videos you've done. I mean, how did you end up in the bee business?
You know, this is another one of these weird, funny stories. We got into beekeeping by accident. My husband and I, we bought a house in the country outside of Ottawa. And when we moved in the springtime, there was a colony of honeybees in the wall of our house. So they were living in between the first and second story, like in the floor joists of our kitchen ceiling. And, you know, even at that was in 2009. And even at that point, you know, there was a lot of talk about colony collapse disorder and problems with honeybees. And so we didn't want to have them exterminated. We couldn't find anybody to help us get them out of the house. So that summer, my husband, Matt, he put on a rubber rain suit, wrapped a towel around his head, put on a Homer Simpson hat and winter gloves, and climbed a ladder and started taking the siding off the side of our house to, you know, look and see what these bees were doing. And so there was they'd built honeycomb all through the floor joist. And so he said, I had a burning stick, this like smoldering stick, because we had some sense that smoke calms bees down, and a little fire going in the backyard, and I'd come and like wave it up at him.
I can just see
probably
this.
Probably doing absolutely nothing.
And you lit his hat on fire and the whole thing. And I can just see it, the ladder.
And so anyway, so what we ended up doing was that.
Your insurance company said you're revoked at that minute.
So he cut out he took an X-Acto knife and he cut that pieces of honeycomb out of the floor or out of the ceiling, and we put them in a cabinet that we had, and we put this cabinet back in the woods and figured, okay, well, that would be the end of this honeybee adventure. They'll go back to living peacefully and we'll go back to our regular lives. And then about 2 weeks after that, we were in the backyard and a swarm of honeybees, like we were just talking about, flew over our garage and started going right back into the house that we had just taken them out of. So at that point, we called a beekeeper, and she came and she brought us some proper bee equipment and a proper beehive, and we moved the swarm of bees into that, and we were hooked. And we just started keeping bees as a hobby, and a few years later, we said, you know what, let's do this as a business. And that's how we kind of started G's Bees, just totally by fluke, I suppose.
And what a great story. What a great, and now you're the queen bee. Matt is the king bee, and you guys own the honey and bee business. What a great story that is. And then hooking up with EDF, and I'm so happy I found them, EDF Renewables, and now you and the sheep and even the battery guys were amazing. I talked to the battery guys. They're amazing. You know, what a great community of people I fell into.
Yeah, it is. It is a really nice group for sure.
So they're doing the right things. and setting up the solar farms and putting bees, sheep, flowers underneath them. And who knows what's next? They'll think of something else, I'm sure. But what's
absolutely
cool is, you know, once this solar farm goes up, I mean, there's not a whole lot of maintenance for the 40 years it's there. But you have recurring work, you know, keeping beekeeping out there. So it brings jobs to the community and best of all, honey, local honey. So, yeah. I mean, you can't, what a great circle of life.
So the fellow that you found with the raw honey on the side of the road, you need to go talk to him and say, you know, where you could set up your bees.
That's a great idea. I didn't realize that I probably got one of the last jars because I ride my bike in the winter. And I didn't know that they didn't produce in the wintertime. I thought they were doing it all year round. So, and I stopped by there a couple of weeks ago again on the bicycle on a nice day, and there was none. And it wasn't because I was buying any. It was because you'll think I'm weird, but I washed and cleaned the jars and gave them back to them. So I gave, you know, because I know them jars are a pain in the butt. And, you know, he probably puts out, you know, a fair amount of money on those jars. So it's not like he asks you to do that. He probably wonders what idiot brought back the jars. But I was actually hoping to meet him and talk to him.
I will.
I'll hook him up. So thank you so much for your time and all the fun stuff with geesbees.ca. And
you're very welcome, Mark. My pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a blast. And you got me good on the freebies. That's a lifelong for me. Well, thanks for doing the podcast, and thanks for listening to the podcast. And we'll be right back. Thanks.